Diagnostic stewardship and collaboration tools. APIC defines diagnostic stewardship as selecting the right test for the right patient at the right time to optimize clinical care. Key points made in this definition include timeliness and accuracy. Microbiology data need to be timely to be of use in providing safe and effective patient care. This relates to the lab's capacity, its workload, its level of efficiency, and the time required for the specific tests. Example, growing a culture. In addition, diagnostic stewardship promotes proactive communication regarding expected turnaround times for both the preliminary and final results. The availability of lab staff to be on call to answer questions also relates to timeliness. Accuracy is needed in antimicrobial resistance surveillance data so that treatment guidelines and IPC programs can be guided by the best evidence. Related to accuracy is representativeness, meaning that the data should reasonably represent the population. For example, in a healthcare facility that specializes in pediatric care, data from adult or geriatric population should be utilized with caution. Non-physician healthcare personnel, HCP, will be involved in the diagnostic stewardship process in primarily a few areas: determining the right microbiology tests or diagnostic tools to use, collecting specimens and ensuring their proper handling and transport, an analysis of the patient's laboratory results by clinicians for patient treatment and by the surveillance team to add the results to the surveillance data. Key point: diagnostic stewardship goes beyond the laboratory as well. It can apply to radiology and other testing performed for the purpose of making treatment decisions. Specimen improvement involves leveraging diagnostic stewardship principles to enhance urine cultures, blood cultures, difficile testing, molecular detection panels, and clinical decision support models requiring the documentation of certain symptoms prior to testing. It is concerned with ensuring that standard operating procedures with clear case definitions and other local guidelines are followed. This includes the following: all of the necessary clinical, demographic, and epidemiological data are provided for each specimen and specimens are labeled correctly. Specimens are collected prior to starting any empiric treatment. The specimen is high in quality. This is accomplished by following relevant guidance in the areas of properly trained HCP, proper collection technique, and proper tools. Specimens can be collected safely. Storage and transport of specimens is done according to relevant guidance so that they remain significant and clinically relevant. This includes what to do if there is a delay in transport. Example, some specimens should not be refrigerated. Some require preservatives such as boric acid. Improving how the data are used includes ensuring that the reports are simple and contain interpretive statements to help guide correct understanding. Negative test results also need to be reported. Upon being received at the healthcare facility, the reports need to be easy to access in patient files, ideally electronically, and as part of surveillance data. It is also important to ensure that the clinician uses the laboratory results to shift from empiric treatment to a pathogen-directed therapy. Better utilization and proper use of diagnostic tools will increase and improve the data that are available for surveillance. Diagnostic stewardship has a primary role in laboratory processing and procedures, but this is of primary interest to laboratory technicians and so is not addressed here. Another aspect of diagnostic stewardship is administrative. This aspect focuses on ensuring that the diagnostic services have enough capacity and the right capabilities, including quality, while also remaining affordable. Communication. Infection prevention and control programs, antimicrobial stewardship programs, and diagnostic stewardship programs depend on effective and efficient communication among many various individuals with varied roles and from potentially distinct facilities. This is necessary as patients are often transferred from one setting to another. A facility transferring an individual into an acute care setting may have pertinent information regarding cultures taken and tests that are in progress or complete, along with other important information about the patient, such as immunocompromising factors. From acute care, patients may be transferred to a rehabilitation facility or other setting, such as long-term care. Key point: gaps in communication during care transitions may result in increased infection risk for both the patient and HCP, which may lead to increased risk to other patients as well. Additionally, the course of rehabilitation for patients moving from acute care to rehabilitation services may be impacted, resulting in discharge or readmission. Therefore, the IP must have good communication with the clinical referral liaison and the IPs at the referring facilities. Communication also comes into play when accepting patients from emergency departments and first responders, such as firefighters or paramedics. Workers and those in similar roles experience unique infection transmission risks. That is, increased risk of exposure to tuberculosis, meningitis, bloodborne pathogens, and thus are of special concern when an exposure event has occurred. Even within a single facility, communication is crucial between patients, HCP, and administrators. Administrators must show commitment to antimicrobial and diagnostic stewardship through budget plans and by being attentive to health data. In turn, they must be informed of the program's operational effectiveness and shortcomings and how those can be addressed. Pharmacists, physicians, nurses, and infection preventionists, among other HCP, must work in concert to monitor antimicrobial resistance and ensure that the use of antimicrobials throughout the facility is appropriate. Patients must be educated as well, as they must know the dangers associated with stopping an antimicrobial early or otherwise misusing them and the risks that EMD or OS pose. Nurses play a particularly crucial role across the areas of interest for an IPC program, given the breadth of roles they fill across the healthcare system and their presence in settings where infectious disease physicians are not always available. This is especially true with regard to antimicrobial stewardship, as is highlighted in a white paper from the American Nurses Association and the CDC, which lists the multitude of ways nurses impact and support the antimicrobial stewardship process, including early recognition of sepsis, timely administration of medication, monitoring for side effects associated with medication, obtaining samples to determine therapeutic levels, accurate surgical prophylaxis, transitioning from four to oral therapy, appropriate resource use, assessing for allergy labeling. In addition to the typical ways in which a nurse impacts the stewardship process, they are also the educator and communicator between the larger care team and the patient. Communication tool, SPAR. The Situation Background Assessment Recommendation, SPAR, framework is a tool for communication among HCP that was adapted from a similar U.S. Navy tool by Michael Leonard, Doug Bonicum, and Suzanne Graham at Kaiser Permanente of Colorado. This tool can be downloaded and used by HCP for communication purposes without seeking permission as long as it is not modified. The tool is for communicating among HCP about patient conditions in an efficient and timely fashion. However, it can be used for any critical conversation requiring action, for example, communication among IPC, antimicrobial stewardship, and diagnostic stewardship committees. This method is easy to use and helps to quickly set expectations regarding what the conversation will be about and its relative urgency. In its guidelines for implementation, the SPAR tool provides advice on how to contact a physician regarding a patient, ensuring that the person making the contact is prepared, such as by personally assessing the patient and their vital signs, reviewing the person's chart, knowing the date of admission and other details such as information from the doctor's progress notes or the nurse's notes. These various documents also should be at hand for the actual conversation. The person contacting the physician then fills out the form and uses it when contacting the physician using the physician's preferred method. Example, pager, call service, cell phone, home phone during off hours. The tool advises not waiting more than 5 minutes between attempts and trying different modes as needed. There should be a process in place for escalating emergencies that cannot wait for the physician to respond so that safe patient care remains the top priority. The form is then submitted to the recipient or the contents of it are verbally conveyed. Here are the four parts of an SPAR form. Situation, S. After identifying who you are, the patient, or other issue in question, and other identifying information such as unit and room number, use this area to indicate the nature of the issue, when it started or occurred, and its severity. Background, B. Here you identify any important background information about the patient or other issue that is critical for the recipient's understanding. This can include date of admission, prior diagnoses, current medications, four fluids, most recent vital signs, code status, and other clinical or patient information such as allergies or current and prior lab results. Assessment. A. Here the sender, example, a nurse, provides their personal assessment of the situation, which could be one or more potential diagnoses. Recommendation. R. Here the sender indicates recommended next steps such as specific diagnostic tests, transferring the patient to another care setting, or the need for a change in the physician's orders. Exhibit 1-29 shows an example of an SPAR form for a suspected UTI. Exhibit 1-29. SPAR form for suspected UTI. Source: Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality,